We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 137. A Municipal Opinion is brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and today I'd like to welcome back to the show a culé with the stuff in his brain to back up the stuff with his fingers. It's Alex Tuica. How you doing, Alex?
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, it's been a hot minute since you've been on the show, and for those who've been tuning in for the last few weeks, we've had so many terrific questions from our closed Facebook group, tbpod.link/group, where we've basically been able to just create a mailbag listener question show or La Ronda. You know, as we near the end of this season here and Barca are still in the fight, Alex, for the treble, it seems like there is some buzz around Barcelona. It seems like we are getting really good engagement. Not only do I want to thank you, the listeners, but particularly those in our closed Facebook group. To get into that group, just answer the three questions, and all you have to do is answer those questions. If you don't answer them, I don't let you in the group. You can ask these questions. So again, thanks to those who did ask these questions. And Alex, if that all made sense to you, I think we can just start here with La Ronda.
Yeah, let's go.
So our first question here is from Rick. If Barça Femení beat Bayern Munich and go to the final, will it be their first Champions League final? And what did it say about Barcelona as a club if both the first team for the men and the women can make it to the final? And I first want to start here with some context. For those who may not have been paying attention to this last week, Barça Femení went on the road at Bayern Munich, scored one goal and take the 1-0 advantage with the away goal as they come back to Barcelona on Sunday. Now, the context again behind this is while Barcelona, the first team for the men, are going for the treble, the Barça Femení will likely finish second behind Atletico Madrid in the league, the same team that knocked them out of the Copa de la Reina. Then in the other bracket, though, of the Champions League, as this is the only competition that Barça Femení, in theory, Atletico Madrid could slip up and Barça could win the league title, but that's very unlikely to happen in this instance with the fixtures left. But meanwhile, in the Champions League, they against Bayern Munich, as I mentioned, are the one semifinal. They have the 1-0 advantage with the away goal. But in the other bracket, Lyon, who's the one team, the landmark team in women's football, they're again the favorite to make the final with a 2-1 lead against Chelsea heading to France. So they're going to be at home then with a 2-1 lead. And if Barcelona were to make the final, though, this being the Femení, they would be a heavy underdog if the opposition is indeed Lyon. They're a five-time champion, winning the last three and all five in this decade. They're led by captain Wendy Renard at the back and women's Ballon d'Or winner Norwegian forward Ada Hegerberg. And in the midfield is Japan captain Saki Kumaji and Germany's Senzifer Marazan. At the center of the attention for Barcelona this year, though, and why I'd make the argument that the Barça Femení deserve even a little more attention for us this year is that while bigger names like Tony Dugan and Lecky Martins have come in, and obviously with Lecky Martins starring for the Netherlands at an international competition and winning the Best Player Award 2 years ago, the pickup of Kerry Hamraoui from Lyon this past year, though, she was not only the goal scorer against Bayern, but she's been playing the midfield as basically a defensive midfielder and filling a need. And that says a lot about the Femení sporting project, that just in the last few years here, they're going after Dugan, they're going after Martins, they're going after Hamraoui. Just like Lyon, they are trying to bring in the best of the best in women's football. And that shows intention. And while the team, if anything, with the roster they have, might not be succeeding or reaching the levels that they didn't even expect to. I think it does show some forward thinking. And for Barcelona and the men's team, Alex, and this is where I'll hand it off to you, is that, you know, even just 2-3 years ago, we were worried about the sporting project that was going on. We were worried about the post-Xavi, post-Iniesta days. And you look at the squad that the team currently has, and it seems like on both sides, both for the Femini and for the first team, that they have positive sporting projects going on at the moment, and both are trending in a positive direction with or without the finals.
Yeah, definitely. First of all, what Barça Femini are doing is a great thing for women's football, which is awesome. It's good for the public reception, you know, it's good for the sport as a whole, for the women. So this is a great thing. And obviously, the men's football, Barça's men's football team is on the upside as well. They're looking good again. The squad, the whole direction the club is going is really positive at the moment, yeah.
And one of the really positive things for me, I think, is that the accessibility of it, where, you know, you and I both said that we'll watch that match on YouTube. And for me, when it comes to the Femini, at least, it's I want to watch as much Barca as I possibly can. So when they put the La Masia games on YouTube, when they put the Femini on YouTube, I will tune in, and I think a lot of other people will. So if you make these games accessible, people will watch. And Alex, speaking about accessibility, Zach asks, the English media seems to be crucifying Barcelona for the lack of accessibility for raising UCL ticket prices. Are Barcelona wrong to do this if this is what's happening?
Well, first of all, it's not a new thing. Like, Barca are charging quite the expensive prices for quite a while now, and they are not the only ones doing it. It's pretty common in Spain to charge a huge amount for traveling fans if they want to see a big team. For example, if Barca plays in Sevilla or in Valencia charged the cheapest ticket was 100 euros, even for the home fans. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Barca plays away to whatever team, the home team is charging ridiculous amounts of money as well. So unfortunately, this is quite normal in Spain, although it's very, very excessive, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think the consternation of all this comes from Barcelona raising tickets on Manchester United fans. So obviously, if you wrong a major global brand club like that, you're going to hear about it. And they were charging away fans 102 euros, which Man U used extra revenue from the first leg, actually, to subsidize the price and lower the ticket to 75 euros. And as you mentioned, Valencia and Sevilla were accused of a similar thing this year in the group stage by Manchester United, and then Sevilla last year in the Europa League. And with similar things, though, happening with Anderlecht and Porto in recent years, as Bayern Munich and Liverpool have come to town, there is a lot going on here where usually, and now Barcelona would in no means be calling themselves a smaller club, but usually in the Champions League and Europe, it is those smaller clubs, not in their own countries, but by the world football regard, when it comes to Anderlecht and Porto, some of the best in Belgium and Portugal, respectively. But those are the clubs that tend to raise the prices and price gouge the giants of the world. Because again, if they want, if the most rich or the wealthiest of the fan bases from those big major clubs want to come on the road, the idea is that they're going to be able to pay those ticket prices. So it really is just the average fan trying to go away and get one of those very, very few tickets in those road stadiums. Now, the question I want to ask you, though, to follow up on this, Alex, and this is just me to give context to the listeners, is that the way that the ownership of clubs works, and I want to contrast Spain and Germany for a second here, where Spain is, as we said, with Barcelona, Valencia, Sevilla, they're the ones getting accused more so than many other clubs for price gouging, not just in Europe, but even the price and tickets of matches in Spain. But now Germany, their clubs are owned a little bit differently by and large as far as ownership groups, and the Bundesliga is praised for how low their ticket prices are for even Friday night or weekend games.
Yeah, that's true, but it's a traditional thing in Germany. There are special prices where you cannot sit; you can only stand. Mm-hmm. Places in the stadium, and these ticket prices are always the lowest, obviously, because you have to stand, and it's a tradition to offer these places in the stadium to your most loyal fans. if to your diehard fans, even to season ticket holders. And usually the price range is from like 12 to 20 euros or something like that. So it's really, really incredibly cheap, but it's a very traditional thing. And as soon as a club tries to up these prices to make them higher, there are protests and everything. So yeah, Germany is a special place when it comes to ticket prices. I fully agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point there, right? That they don't allow for price gouging and a great change with all this, where even for other tickets, you can go for less than 50 euros. When it comes to Barcelona, you're not going to find a ticket if, you know, that's not that's, you know, accessible to the general public. You're not going to find a ticket whether you're a Barcelona fan or an away fan. You're not going to find one for less than 75 or
well,
euros.
This is also a thing of supply and demand, right? I mean, Barcelona is one of the, let's say, three biggest clubs, most famous clubs, most exciting clubs in the world. So of course, then they are in a metropolitan city, a touristic city, right? So they have a lot of tourists, they had a lot of fans, they are very attractive. So of course they can demand higher prices than the average Bundesliga club, let's be honest. So this also plays a part. But yeah, many things are coming into consideration here. But
I mean, I think the best analogy I try to use is that, I mean, I live in New York, as I've kind of mentioned before, and, you know, the New York Knicks are not necessarily a terrific basketball, as you and I both watch basketball, Alex, it's not really a terrific basketball franchise in terms of wins and losses, and yet it is still top three on average, and sometimes top one even, being the worst team record-wise or percentage-wise of wins-losses over the last, you know, two decades, and yet their ticket prices are some of the highest. And it's, yes, because it's New York, but also the allure of tourism and MSG is a big part of it as well. So I think you really hit the nail on the head there, that are Barcelona wrong to have these tickets so high? Sure, but in the same respect, there's a lot of reasoning that goes behind it. And yes, tourism and just people coming into the city with a little bit of money to spend have slowly risen those ticket prices over time. And it would, again, it financially doesn't make much sense for the club to try to keep them low, because in the same respect, they would sell out. You'd never get one. So, I mean, that would be the other counter argument to that. If it didn't cost so much, then if you're trying to plan weeks in ahead, you might not even get one at that time. So that's what they're dealing with. And yeah, it comes with everything to it, including the Camp Nou. Now let's switch over to a question from Enrique. Been some talk this week about Benzema being the best number nine, that being Karim Benzema of Real Madrid, if you didn't know, and having a better season than Luis Suarez. Without bias, why are these claims being made? And Alex, the quick answer to this one, and I'll give you the stats and kind of let you answer the question. Suarez has 24 goals, 21 in La Liga, 9 assists, 3 in the Champions League, obviously 0 goals in the Champions League, as we've talked about before. Benzema, meanwhile, 30 goals in all competitions, which have constituted, because they won the Champions League last year, more competitions for Real Madrid, but 21, tying with Luis Suarez in La Liga, and 7 assists. Now, those are just numbers, Alex, and the eye test tells us that Luis Suarez still has a little bit more, but Benzema has to do more for Real Madrid, and I think that's where the crux of his argument comes from.
Well, just talking stats-wise, the key stat is in the league, both have the same amount of goals, 21. So you can say they are on the same level, at least goals-wise, stats-wise. Thing behind the goals is their role. Like Suarez is the key attacker in Barcelona, and Karim Benzema is even more the key attacker for Real Madrid now that Cristiano Ronaldo left. So what happened actually is, Ronaldo leaving Madrid liberated Benzema, meaning he has a bigger role now, he has more responsibility. He is, in fact, their go-to guy in attack, which means he now scores more, he has more freedom to do so, he has even a bigger burden, but clearly he's going on pretty well, so he upped his level. So credit to Benzema. I think they are both having a really good season, really, really doing good. The numbers show it as well, so there's that. I don't think there's that much in between them. So the question was from Enrique, right? If Benzema is having a better season, I would say, why would you say that better season? I would say both are having a very good season, and that's that. Credit to both of them.
Yeah, and when it comes to role, I mean, Benzema is supposed to be the number one option now, or he's had to take over that mantle, and it hasn't been Gareth Bale in a disastrous season for Real Madrid. And by disastrous, I mean they still finished top four, but again, by their standards, not winning any trophies, not really contending and anywhere near any of the final trophies, then again, not the season they wanted. But in the same respect, because Benzema's the first option, you compare him with Barcelona's first option, and that's Lionel Messi. And that's the whole point, that Suarez is the Robin to Messi's Batman, and
yep,
Benzema has to be the Batman because Gareth Bale, you know, he didn't even want to be the Scarecrow, you know, and that, and unfortunately, again, I don't want to heap on Gareth Bale, but that's just how it's been with his production. But I think let's worry about Barcelona some more with Eric's question. How will Carlos Alenya, who is the man of the match recently against Alaves, this is me adding this in, and if you want to check out where I talked about his man of the match, that's on our Patreon page. You can head over there, as well as Ricky Puig getting playing time next season, especially with Vidal returning. And that's where this becomes news this week, that Arturo Vidal, nothing is set in stone, but his contract is for at least another year, could be for an additional third year. And so we could see more of Arturo Vidal in that midfield that we'll talk about later as being, you know, expected to be overhauled, but it might not seem to be overhauled that much. So how will Alenya and Puig get playing time?
Well, this is a good question, actually, because it's tricky to see how that will pan out. I could see that it will happen that one of them will leave on loan, which would be a sensible option, in my opinion. I think it's difficult to give them both playing time, given that the central midfield of Barcelona is so stacked. I mean, let's not forget, Frankie de Jong is coming, Arthur is there and still growing, right? He still needs loads of playing time. He's very young. Rakitic is there, probably will not be sold as things stand right now. Vidal will probably be there. They seem to be happy with him, Barcelona. We have Coutinho. We don't know which his best place is yet. So the midfield is stacked. And yeah, Alenya looks very promising now. He played really well against Alaves in the midweek game. So, and Puig, I think Puig, you pronounce him, right? Ricky Puig. Yeah.
Yep, Catalan, yep.
My Catalan is not the best, but I think it's Ricky Puig.
Yep.
Let's call him Ricky. I think he will have it very difficult to break into this side because of many reasons, but the biggest one is he lacks the experience and playing time on the biggest level, and he requires a lot of playing time on this level to grow, and I'm not sure he can get that in Barca's stacked midfield. So right now, I think the most probable option, maybe most sensible option even, is to send Ricky on loan somewhere, maybe.
I mean, the only issue I find with these two in particular out on loan, now I agree that there won't be enough space in them for them next season, but in the same respect, my fear is that the way Alanya, and I'm not comparing this to Samper's loans came, they failed more because of injury than it was him or playing style or anything like that, but he was just perpetually injured in bad situations with relegation clubs. But for Alanya and Puig, because that indoctrination of Barcelona style, you can see it. When we watch Alenya, you say, he was raised in La Masia. That's what I'm seeing now. And the same thing with Puig, where I know people are saying he's slight of frame, but he's going to be 20 years old next season. And while that is still relatively young in football terms, we saw Manchester City the other day, Phil Foden, who is 2 years younger than Puig, is coming on and starring for Pep Guardiola in what's supposed to be a much more physical kind of game against much more physical opponents. So I think of what I've seen of Puig, and yes, he's still playing in the third division, but I think with the proper playing time at Barcelona, they would be good enough to be getting consistent playing time and getting minutes. But the crux of this argument comes that they do not have the minutes for them. And so what do you do? Do you put them on a loan with the potential that you're going to send them somewhere that is not, where they're not going to be able to show the full pantheon of what they can do in terms of their skill sets and what fits so perfectly at Barcelona? So I think the real difficulty here doesn't even come with finding them playing time. I don't think that's going to happen. It's with, if you do find a loan for one or both of them, where, and I don't think Alenya will be gone. If he was able to carve out some minutes this year, I think it'll be the same thing even with De Jong coming. But for Puig, where do you send him that's going to fit? And I think the relationship with Ajax that is apparently in the works, I think that's something you have to earmark and say, we need to revisit that, because that's one of the few clubs we've seen in world football this year that even fit what they do. I mean, even a Real Betis, who, you know, everyone's, you know, glamoring over how Quique Setién is playing, but yet I still don't see in that system, in that 4-3-3, and a lot of times Setién will even play five at the back. And in that 5-3-2 situation, I'm not sure where Puig exactly would perfectly fit in, unless it was as, you know, this attacking midfielder, which isn't really what he is. So I think that becomes part of the problem with these two. But again, we're unfortunate. It's not our problem. But the easier question here I'll follow up with, Alex, for you is, Luke asks, what are the chances that next year's starting midfield could be Arthur, Alenia, and De Jong? I mean, of what we've just spoken about, my idea for this is it's less than 5%, because that means that both Rakitic and Busquets would have to be jettisoned from that starting lineup, and I don't see both of them wind up losing their spot to a new arrival and De Jong, even as good as he is, to a new arrival and Alenia.
Yeah, the midfield is tricky for Valverde next season, definitely, because Frankie needs a big role, obviously. Alenia will need a bigger role because his role is not big at the moment, but he needs definitely a bigger one. I mean, he's 21 as well already, so he's not exactly a greenhorn anymore that much as right. others. So it will be difficult to see them all fitting in there. Yeah, I definitely agree. Unless you have injuries, which we don't hope to have, but you never know, right? But yeah, I mean, Vidal is doing good, and clearly Valverde likes his style, likes his approach, likes him as a player, so plays him a lot. And we know that Vidal is not happy if he sits up on the bench all the time. So you have playing time for Vidal there. So yeah, it will be tricky, definitely. The midfield is interesting, the midfield situation at Barcelona.
Well, speaking about that midfield situation, let's get a question from Douglas. Will Valverde start Vidal over Arthur in the Liverpool matches? I think we can go with a yes or no question on this one.
I think in the away game, I would say yes. I can totally imagine that happening, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has gone in this past with Arthur in the starting lineup in these situations. So the idea would be that if he's looking for a positive result, and of course, again, we'll remind listeners that it's Barcelona at home first. So I think Arthur certainly gets a start at the Camp Nou. Now, if they're defending a lead at Anfield on Tuesday the 7th, then they go with Vidal potentially. But I think if they're going for a result in any way, I think it winds up being Arthur. Now, the other option, as Juan brings up, should Barcelona consider playing a 4-4-2 formation against Liverpool with Busquets, Rakitic, Vidal, and Roberto in the midfield? And I think I'm going to stick with the answer here that I think that's what you could see at Anfield, but I don't think you see it at the Camp Nou.
No, I don't think we will see that at the Camp Nou. And at Anfield, I think it depends highly on the result in the first leg. Like if they have to defend the lead, a good one even, let's say a 2-goal lead, for example, then maybe Valverde goes back to being himself, which is more cautious, right? Mm-hmm. But I hope they won't do that, because, I mean, last season it was a necessity because of Dembele's injury, right? Because we didn't have enough wingers. But right now there's no real reason to play 4-4-2. I mean, you can argue that if Coutinho plays, even if it's on paper a front three, it's actually more like a front two of Messi and Suarez, because Coutinho plays more like an attacking midfielder. So you could make a case for the front three of Coutinho, Suarez, and Messi actually being a 4-4-2, right? Mm-hmm. So that could maybe happen, that he starts Coutinho ahead of Dembele, and on paper it's a 4-4-3, but it's actually more like a 4-4-2-ish. That could happen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening for sure. And now before we talk Coutinho, I want to get a question, and he's been asking for the last few weeks, and Ellie, I have seen your question, but we've had some time being limited. Today we have some time to ask, are we the most boring team between the four semifinalists left? And again, for listeners, this is Tottenham and Ajax in the one semifinal, and Liverpool and Barcelona in the other. And I guess this question is negative because boring has a negative connotation, and I know you talk about that in a second, Alex, but for me, I think we'll start with some positivity before we answer it, that Ajax are playing terrific football. It's great to watch. Tottenham under Pochettino, generally an exciting team. And while they don't have Harry Kane, Sun Heung-min has been really, really awesome as well, evolving his game and just being a jack of all trades offensively for them, as well as Liverpool obviously playing with their dreaded front line with Mane, Salah, and Firmino. And so I think even if we agree that Barcelona were the most boring of the four semifinalists, that's not really a bad thing because the other three teams are playing a terrific level.
Well, let me start off this way. I really enjoy watching Ajax. I really, really enjoy watching them. I saw, I think, pretty much every knockout game of them in the Champions League, and both games against Bayern in the group stage, and they are playing fantastic football. Like, really, for a neutral, even if you don't root for them, you just watch the game as a neutral, I think they are playing brilliantly. I really like Ajax. But to answer the question, I mean, it's difficult for me to tell Ellie what he can see as boring or not. I mean, it's a very subjective point of view. It's a very subjective approach, right? Maybe I find something interesting that he finds boring. So I would not say that, in my opinion. I would not say that Barca is, for example, more boring than Spurs, because I watch a lot of Spurs games, and I think Barca is the more interesting team, the more fun team, even if Valverde's Barca tends to be more like, you know, not as exciting as Pep's Barca, clearly, but I would not call them the most boring side. No, I would not.
Well, I think, yeah, the other thing I want to add to that is that there is that Messi factor, where there's a reason why I tell everybody I know that whether or not you like Barca, you should watch Barca. I think that's right. That's what I always tell people, that for people who go on, you know, I see other soccer fans, whether they're, or football fans, whether they're Chelsea fans or Man United fans or whoever it may be, they'll see on Facebook or Twitter, they'll just be scrolling through and they'll see the Messi highlight from that weekend, the thing that he did in La Liga. And I go, actually, I watch him every week. You should see what Messi does. He does that 3 or 4 times every game, every week, where you go, wow. And I think as far as boring, yeah, unfortunately, I think I know what Ellie's trying to get to, and he's trying to get to the team concept. But between Dembele and Messi, Barcelona have the potential and the opportunity for having you go, holy moly, like once or twice every game because of just when those two are on the field. And not just even together, but individually, they have the ability to wow you, I think, in ways that no player on Tottenham and arguably no player on even Ajax or Liverpool could boast, where even the things that front three of Liverpool does at this point with all their pressing and that, it is a very calculated, systematic approach. And very, very few times, it really has only really been Salah and occasionally Mane have, you know, made you go stand up and say, wow. And particularly for Salah, not this year, it was more last year where he'd have those wonder goals. But as I said, Barcelona have Messi, so I don't know how you could still say that they're the most boring team because of the things that he individually is capable of. So, Ellie, I think we tried to answer your question as best we could. I think we went a little deeper than I thought we would. So I think we'll wrap this one up with a few conversation points about Coutinho. First question, we'll set the base here, Alex, from Ananthaswamy. Should we sell Coutinho regardless of the rest of his season?
Let me go all business on you. That depends on the price.
Please do.
That's the answer. That depends on the price. If the price is good, I would consider it. But it depends on the offers. If there's no offers, you don't want to ship him out for like 1/3 of the money you paid for him. Mm-hmm. So the offer has to be a good one. And then looking at my squad, looking at his performances over now 2 seasons, or almost 2 seasons, then we can consider it and have to evaluate it. But it really depends on the offer.
When you say offer, so you said 1/3 is not good enough. Would you take half? Would you take 80 million euro?
Well, from what I've read from journalists close to Barca, from journalists with good sources inside the club, I've heard that Barca wants at least 100 million back, because mm-hmm. the overall fee, I think, is with bonuses and everything, is I think 160 is what they paid.
Yep, that's correct.
So even only getting 100 back would be still a big loss, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what they want, at least. I think they want 100 million, and that's more or less the ballpark figure here we are talking about here.
Yeah, and I don't think the problem's going to be even should. It's going to be can Barcelona sell Coutinho? Because at 100 million, if that's what they're asking for, you're talking six clubs in the world that can front a bill of 100 million euro for Coutinho.
Yeah.
He hasn't been a 100 million euro player this year. And so,
exactly.
I mean, I'm not even sure. And the other point of that is that the clubs that can afford 100 million for Coutinho are the ones that are in direct competition with Barcelona in things like the Champions League. So you're, in a sense, you'd be selling directly to Champions League opposition or the teams, the best of the best, who you are, you know, most likely going to face off if you continue on a similar path. And if he goes to that club and succeeds, they wind up being a Champions League favorite. Well, again, then you have a really good chance of matching up in the knockout rounds in future seasons. And so that's part of it too, that you're guaranteeing him to go somewhere that you're going to have to face him. Not likely if it's someplace else. But again, there's only five or six clubs that you have the choice for. And then what are their needs? And I think that's the other point here. We ask about need, and that if we see Coutinho as a winger, that's where part of my, you know, this is now money, you know, not the business side of it, but from as far as a depth and the power of a squad being the circumstances, there is a lack of wing depth where when it comes to, if Dembele is the starter next season and stays healthy, then you're still let next season. I think, you know, we're not talking about the number nine and Luis Suarez and replacing him this show. That we'll save that for, don't worry, we'll talk about that a lot. But as far as next season, you're looking at a front three of Suarez, Messi, and Dembele. And then, of course, the midfield, you don't need anybody there. We're, you know, totally set. De Jong coming in, even with the same midfielders this year, there's been enough depth with Rafinha not even healthy and certain guys not even factoring in. There's been enough depth here at the end of the season. But if Coutinho on the wing, you know, right now all you have is, yes, Messi, but you have Dembele, Coutinho, and in theory, Malcolm. And our last question from Ted, if Barcelona sell Coutinho, will Malcolm stay and will Valverde play him? Well, the news from today was that Malcolm and his agent have apparently told the club that he wants out and that Valverde doesn't count on him. And it's been well told that even if it's not a personal thing, Valverde didn't necessarily want this player, and this was the one player this last summer that the board went ahead and got without Valverde signing off on it. That's kind of become public knowledge. So if Malcolm is leaving, now you're talking just Coutinho and Dembele. And so the wrinkle I want to add to it is that Alenya, if he wants playing time, now for Barca B and in the past, he's played up on the wing as this, you know, basically in a 4-4-2 and this as attacking midfielder in a as a winger, if you will. And that might be an option for Barcelona to add depth there. But in the same respect, I'm not sure if Coutinho is going to have if we're going to be able to get rid of Coutinho, because I don't know if we're going to have the wing depth to replace him.
Well, they are definitely connected, the two players, because it's clear that they need to earn some money in the summer. Mm-hmm. That's being widely reported. So they need some income. Obviously, Malcolm doesn't play a lot. Obviously, he's very unhappy. Obviously, Valverde doesn't like him that much. Otherwise, he would play him more often. So I think if they can, which also, by the way, ESPN reported that if Barca can get back the close to the 40 million they paid for him, they would probably sell him. And which is more important even, I think he will want to go because he's unhappy. This is the big difference to the Coutinho case, by the way, which I wanted to add. I don't think Coutinho wants to leave Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So this is, we should not forget that it's not the NBA. We cannot trade players away if we are unhappy with them, right? The player has to agree to join another club. And I don't see Coutinho wanting to leave Barca. Also, a point you mentioned, which is a very good one, I don't see many clubs that are able to pay the amount of money which probably will make Barca happy, like say the 100 million we mentioned. As you said, there are not many clubs who can even pay that. If we look at the handful of clubs which might be able to pay it, for example Man City, they don't need Coutinho. They have De Bruyne as a attacking midfielder. They have Leroy Sané on the left wing. They have Sterling on the left or right wing. They don't need Coutinho. Look at PSG, they have Neymar. They don't need Coutinho either. So even if they would be able to pay it, they just don't need the player. So I cannot see Coutinho leaving the club, because I just don't see a club he can end up at, because I don't think he wants to leave. And to get back to the Malcolm issue, because I think Malcolm will end up the one guy mm-hmm. leaving, so they earn some money there, and that's it.
Yeah, and the priorities of the club, if they're so inclined of getting De Ligt, you still have the problems of a potential future number nine, of, people have always said a backup left back. Now, whether it's Kukure or whoever, I find that to be less of a problem. Even seeing the way that Semedo and Roberto have both filled in as well at left back as backup. So to me, I'm a little less worried about that position. But again, that future of the number nine position is certainly the one staring Barcelona right in the face here moving forward. And you might even have to, if Jasper Cillessen moves on this summer to another good opportunity, or an opportunity he deserves, as we've mentioned about too. He'd be the one guy in the club that I'd say I would be really happy for him to see him move on, because I think he deserves a starting spot at a major club in the world. He's been terrific as Cillessen, and you might need to fill in a backup goalkeeper if they don't find that Iñaki Peña, who is still a teenager, is worthy of being a backup and playing. And I guess he wouldn't play in any competitions, but if Ter Stegen got injured, God forbid, next season, and you're rolling with just a teenager as your goalkeeper for an extended amount of time, well, then that's, again, that's something that Barcelona have to be thinking about, contingency plans. And when you're one of the top clubs in the world, as Frances always said, as now I've been saying on the podcast recently, that Barcelona play with, they have, if you count Cillessen even, they've got 15 starting caliber players. And we're not counting Alenya or Malcolm. We're saying that they have basically 15 players that if you plug them in or replace them with the guy at their position, that Barcelona loses almost nothing from their starting lineup. Just that's how deep they are this season. And you compare that to last season, then, I mean, they are three or four solid starters deeper than they were a season ago. And that has gone a long way in helping them survive in every competition.
Yeah, you mentioned something interesting, because I think last time I was a guest on your show, we also discussed Cillessen, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct, yeah.
And I think we agreed that he's probably the most awesome number two you can imagine. I mean, the club is so happy with him, but mm-hmm. I think he is not exactly that happy, because he only plays in the Copa del Rey.
But also, there's less consternation between him and Ter Stegen than there is where, look at Courtois and Keylor Navas. That is a problem and a drama that we don't deal with.
Yeah, because they are both clear number ones, and both are signed as a number one or have the standing to be the number one.
True.
So that was an unnecessary signing there. But Cillessen was signed to be the number two. He knew what he was signing for just now, after, I think, two seasons, right?
Right.
He grew a bit tired of it, obviously. So, yeah, I think they will sell him in summer. I can see that happening, that he says he grew tired of them, that he wants to play. I think he even expressed that in an interview, that he wants to have a starting role somewhere. And I think he's doing that great that clubs, that he's in the focus of some clubs. I can see a club like, say, for example, Roma. Like the magnitude of a club like Roma or mm-hmm. something like that some club like that will end up signing him, which maybe is not the worst thing for Barca either, because I think they can generate some good money for him, say 20 to 30 million or something like that, which mm-hmm. will help them.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think every euro will count in the summer, but then again, that is the drama of the summer. But we have a lot of exciting matches still left to go as Barcelona are chasing this treble. And Alex, I want to thank you for coming on to these shows, as again, we near the end of the season, they become more and more important, and we're getting more and more listeners. It's really an exciting time to be a Barcelona fan, to be a part of this show. And again, I thank all my guests, particularly you, Alex, this week for coming on. So I want to ask, as I always do, where can people find you a little bit more?
Well, right now I'm writing for a German website called Barca Welt. It's German, Barca Welt. It's Barca Welt, if I pronounce it in English.
Yep. That'll be in the show notes as well.
But for all the English listeners or American listeners, just hit me up on Twitter. It's the same as my name, Alex Troika. Because I tweet in English all the time. So mm-hmm. yeah, just follow me there, and you get more news and opinions of mine if you're interested in that kind of thing.
Sure thing. And yeah, for those who are willing to use Google Translate, we're going to have the link to that in the show notes as well. So thanks for tuning in. Again, you can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe to the show. You can find us on social media too. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group, where we got all of our listener questions from another one of our La Ronda mailbag shows, is tbpod.link/group for deeper dives and discussions as well. You can help us out on Patreon to continue making these shows at tbpod.link/Patreon. We're also on YouTube now at the Barcelona Podcast. So check us out, hit that subscription button, and thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Barcelona. Barça, cheerio.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.